church kitchen, ladies, ladies.
This is the place with the helpful hardware, folks.
And welcome back to Success Made to Last. I'm Rick Tocchini. This is our Legends series. This also happens to mark our 3,001st show for Success Made to Last Network. You know the brand sounds that you heard at the front end of the show? From 20th Century Fox, Drum Roll Off, to Church Kitchen Ladies, to Ace Hardware. These brands have consciously built sonic strategies into our lives, and they have sonic equity. On today's Legends Show, we're so honored to have on Steve Keller, recognized globally as one of the great audio gurus of all time. Steve is a leading expert in the field of sonic strategy and identity. He has not only a head for data and a heart for sonic expression, but he actively engages in collaborative research projects exploring the power of sound to shape our perceptions and influence our behavior. Steve is the Sonic Strategy Director at Pandora, a subsidiary of SiriusXM, which is the largest ad-supported audio entertainment streaming service in the United States. Steve Keller, welcome to our Legends Show.
Well, Rick, thanks for that introduction. And I actually feel really lucky to be working with the Pandora team. They're a great group of people. And as you said in the intro, kind of speak to my head and heart, both with the with sound science and sound art.
Yeah, it sounds like that Steve Keller and Pandora are a great combination where the two are better together. Hey, Steve, let's talk about your backstory and tell us about the ignition point for this sonic adventure that you're on.
Sure, and I'll try and keep it the condensed version. I've been around for a while and had a lot of adventures, but I'll kind of hone in on the more pertinent parts. I would say, you know, my story from beginning to the point now where I am has evolved around three of the passions in my life. So the first passion is music. I started taking piano lessons when I was a young child, 6 years old. Got into junior high and high school, picked up a guitar, started writing songs. Mainly because it was a pretty effective dating tool, but never thought about music as a career. So when I graduated from high school and headed to university, I was also really interested in what makes us tick as human beings, how our minds work, how we function in groups, and the psychology behind all of that. So I went to university. Mm-hmm. Studied psychology. That was what I graduated with my degree in, and was on a path to head to grad school, work on my master's and PhD. I was sitting out of school for a year, doing a couple of jobs, one research and statistics for a community mental health organization, and the other was teaching students at a school that had severe behavioral disorders. And in that time, I had continued to play with music. I was actually still kind of writing music and playing in the coffee houses occasionally. And to be honest, there was no great aha moment for me at this point. I think I just gave myself permission to think about doing something different. And I took a detour. Instead of heading to grad school, I headed to Nashville. So I wound up in Nashville, Tennessee, and worked there in a lot of different aspects of the music business. My big break into the music scene there, believe it or not, was doing dance remixes of country songs. It was the early 90s, and a lot of folks were starting to show up at dance clubs and were doing line dances, and DJs were starting to talk to all the country labels saying, can we get dance mixes of these songs, and I was happened to be one of two guys in Nashville that knew how to do that. So I worked with Tim McGraw, and Lynyrd Skynyrd, and Neil Diamond, and Wynonna, and a lot of the country greats at that time. But I was also doing a lot of other things in the music business, and one of those things was writing music for commercials. And I found through that process that I just really loved advertising and marketing. I had a knack for writing copy and was also writing copy for some agencies and brands. And eventually, in 2005, these three passions kind of came together, and I think this was my real aha moment. I was doing some reading and was stumbling across something called audio branding, sonic branding. At the time, a lot of the really interesting case studies were coming out of Europe. And the more I read, the more I realized this was a beautiful combination of my skill set, psychology and research, music and sound, and advertising and marketing. And so I started my own company in 2005, created to work in this field of sonic branding. As that grew, interestingly enough, I found myself drawn back into academia, working with a lot of academics and universities, studying the psychology of sound, how it affects us, how it affects our perceptions, our emotions, and how it can be used as an effective tool in advertising. And ultimately, as I grew that company and did a lot of work both here and in the U.S., I came into Pandora's orbit, and we started doing a lot of work together. And I think it just reached a point a couple of years ago where we were looking deep into each other's eyes and realized it was a match made in heaven and decided to put a ring on it. So they hired me, and here I am as the Sonic Strategy Director for Pandora. And when people say, "That's a really cool title, but what do you do?" I talk about this idea of audio alchemy, which is in the Jungian sense, where you blend things together and something precious comes out on the other side. And for me, it's working with our clients, blending sound science and sound art in a way that helps them make sound decisions, literally and figuratively.
Man, that is a great journey. You've intersected skill and passion and love and vision. And if there were a cocktail, it sounds like this cocktail would be mixed perfectly with vocation and avocation.
It is. And I consider that a privilege because I know that it's often rare to be able to have something that you're passionate about, to work in an industry, whether it be music or advertising, that's particularly volatile, and to have spent my life basically kind of carving out a niche and doing something where I'm continually learning, continually growing, and have a privilege to work with really, really talented people along the way. I'm always at my best when I'm the dumbest guy in the room, because that means I've got an opportunity to really learn something. So I try and put myself in those situations as much as possible.
Steve, as promised, I have some very specific questions from friends of mine at Procter & Gamble, so let's hit it. Number one, what role can sound play in a brand's expression?
Wow, we could spend an entire hour talking about that, but we don't have that much time. So I'll say this. First of all, we all know the power of sound in our own lives. You know, we mark those moments in our lives where, maybe it's a sound from childhood that immediately takes us back there, or a song that, we heard when we fell in love, or maybe something we listened to, we went through a breakup. And we understand this emotional connection. I think a lot of brands understand that too. That's why in a lot of advertising, they'll use music or they'll use voice or they'll use sound design. But I think what's important for us to realize is that sound isn't simply a tactic. We often default to, making these choices at the last minute when we've already gone through the process of deciding about a lot of other things. And so in my work, I'm attempting to help our clients understand not only the power of sound, but how to start making these choices earlier in the process. So, more directly answering the question in terms of that power, we know from the research that sound is really effective to do a number of things. One is to build an emotional connection. But not only to create an emotional connection, we can also shape behavior with sound. We know that sound can steer you towards a particular product or a particular sale. It also affects your perception. It's a very effective tool to establish memory and recall. And in some recent research, we found that using sonic cues or a consistent use of music as part of a brand identity can actually be more effective in producing brand salience than visuals like a visual logo or a character or even a celebrity in advertising. So there's a whole list of ways in which music can and sound can be used to impact our memory, our physiology, our psychology, and our behavior. And when you understand all of those things, I think that's where brands often leave a lot of sonic equity behind, if you will, because they're only looking at it as, I've got a script and somebody needs to read it, or I've got a spot and I need a piece of music under it. They're not making strategic decisions to really give them the outcomes that they could have if they were concentrating more on the decisions they were making.
Okay, well, we've got to get more information from you on that, so expect us to have you back on this show. Here's the next question, and it comes in from a great person who's associated with the Old Spice brand that has that familiar whistle. So the question is, what does a brand voice mean, and what opportunities are there to develop it?
Well, the term brand voice can be a little confusing depending on the perspective you're coming from. A lot of brands would have style guides where they talk about the brand voice, and usually when they talk about it there, it's more in terms of the tonality of a brand, which can be helpful when you're writing copy for a brand and thinking about the tone that you're supposed to be taking there. In sonic identity, when we talk about brand voice, we very often mean quite literally the voice of a person speaking. And I'm going to use that as a segue to say that identity, sonic identity, isn't simply about any one sonic asset. It's about understanding a sonic profile of the brand. How are you translating brand values, brand meaning, and brand attributes into a sonic language? And in the case of Old Spice and the whistle, if you will, that's what we would call a mnemonic device or a sonic logo, an audio logo. There are a lot of different terms that are used. It's a very short piece of sound that when you hear it and you hear that whistle, you think of Old Spice right away. It's the sonic equivalent of a visual logo. And yet there are other elements that can go into building your identity. So in addition to that, is there a particular voice that you're hearing consistently along with that audio mnemonic? Is there another piece of music that might be a longer version of that mnemonic or motif? And so working with a lot of brands, what we attempt to do is say, what are the distinctive audio assets within your brand's sonic system? And how do we leverage those as consistently as possible across multiple touch points? So when you think about the sonic universe and every place sound can touch a consumer on that journey, it's not just in a television advert or an ad on Pandora or a radio ad or something in social media. It could be something that happens at point of sale. It could be something that happens when you call into the brand and are maybe put on hold. It could happen in a mobile device, in your UX, your UI. You could hear it at retail events. And so for Old Spice, it's how can you use that whistle in a lot of different places and leverage it to do different things? Now, could you use voice technology where if somebody whistles, there's a response that comes back as a result of that? So it's just kind of getting creative with how you're using these properties and using them consistently.
Man, that's excellent. So the next question is this. If Amazon owns e-commerce and Google owns search, it seems to us that Pandora owns sound. So the question is, how did you come up with a sonic logo knowing that you lead the ecosystem of sound?
The sonic P, as we call it. Well, that was a whole process when we're working on sonic identity. It's a design process. And so we did exactly what we do for any of our clients. And that was starting by kind of looking at the history of Pandora, what were the identity and the brand attributes. We kind of looked at the archetypes around the brand, which was really this idea of, the every person, someone who connects with everyone, but also the magician, the idea that there's kind of some magic in our music genome that can translate into helping understand what you like. We kind of think of ourselves as that person in the room that anybody can come up to and talk to and say, "Hey, I like this band. Have you heard of them?" And we'd say, "Well, yeah. Hey, have you listened to this band over here? We think you'd like that." So we took all of that information and tried to distill it into an expression of the brand. And the unique challenge for us was that Pandora functions in the audio space. So we wanted something that could be flexible enough to define us, but could work in a lot of different contexts. And we wanted to be very careful how we used it because we didn't want to interrupt the consumer's experience of listening to music. And so we came up with this five-note motif that functions very similar to our visual P, in the spirit of Pandora's vessel, which in the earliest mythology it was a vessel that contained a lot of wonderful things. And so our visual P is basically the shape of a P, and if you see it used in market, you'll see how we very often will fill that P in with a lot of different colors, a lot of different designs. So it maintains the shape of the P. And we've done that with our sonic P. It's a melody that is always going to be consistent, but we can change the sounds that are used with that melody so that depending on the audience we're connecting with, we can meet them where they are with what they're listening to. That was essentially the journey and how we ended up on those five notes. There was definitely testing that was involved along the way. There were different prototypes. So it was a pretty rigorous process, and we've been really happy with the response to the Sonic P so far.
You know, Steve, in my own career in brand management, I was at Frito-Lay when they debuted Chester Cheetah, but we held on to the cheese that goes crunch. And I'd love to know some of the best brands that you think leverage a sound strategy.
Well, you know, there are quite a few on my list, all for different reasons. You know, I think the challenge is always if finding a brand that ticks off all the boxes, and I think there's room out there for brands to do it even better. I think of brands in the insurance vertical. When you think of Allstate, where they've actually leveraged, we talked about brand voice earlier, the voice of Dennis Haysbert, very recognizable. Mm-hmm. Or other brands like State Farm, which has the Like a Good Neighbor jingle that they've shortened into a short audio mnemonic. Liberty Mutual. A lot of insurance brands, are using sound, in terms of identity. We have MasterCard lately, who has been really looking at more of the sensory components of a brand and using sound as a sensory enhancement. And so they have a particular identifiable sound that's used at card readers. And they also have built that into a theme that you hear used in their advertisements and a lot of their experiential events along the way. I think of brands like Intel with their Intel Bong that they have used so consistently throughout the world that it's still one of the most recognized sonic properties. Other brands like Apple, for instance, where I think what they've done really effectively is looked at the use of the sound as part of UX. You think of their new AirPod Pros and the way that there's distinctive functional sounds that are used that help you recognize the brand. But it also does really interesting things when they're in my ear and I'm getting directions while I'm walking somewhere. Not only will it get an alert that taps my wrist on my watch, but a signal will ping me either in my right ear or my left ear, telling me which direction I need to be turning. So it's all of these things that go into a sonic experience of the brand. And I think everyone listening needs to really think about identity through that lens. It's about an experience. And how do we experience each other as people? It's getting to know our voices, getting to, you know, understand what our emotions are through how things change with the pitch of our voice, or maybe the loudness of our voice and the tone of our voice. And the more consistent we are in that expression, the easier it is to get to know us, the more trustworthy that we feel, and the more familiar and likable we are to each other. So when you're thinking about sound for your brand, think about the experience of your brand and you know, build some KPIs around behaviors that you want to see, perception of the brand that you want to have, and the equity you want to build, and how sound can help you meet those KPIs. And then you'll have some outcomes to measure that sound against.
Okay, let's play a montage of our Legends favorites. And by the way, if your brand is not on this playlist, perhaps you need a new sonic experience from your brand.
Now that you know the truth, are you in good hands?
Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Liberty, 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 liberty.
All right. Let's move to our professor moment. Steve, enlighten our audience with the definition of two terms, cross-modalism and synesthesia.
Sure. So cross-modalism, it's a branch of psychology, psychophysics, which is just a mashup of a couple of words. And the study is really about how our perception of the world is a amalgamation of all our sensory input. Synesthesia, which you talked about, is actually a condition in which the sensory modalities are literally cross-wired in an individual's brain. So if you show them a color, they may not only see that color, they may actually smell it. There may be a smell associated with it, or there could be a sound that's associated with it. You know, conversely, you may play someone a piece of music, and there may be colors that are associated with it, or certain smells that may go with that music. And what we found from the research is that naturally, all of us have this this condition of cross-modalism, which is where the modalities of our senses are used in a way to look for congruent associations. And for the listeners out there, if you want to know more about this, just Google a fellow by the name of Charles Spence, who's the head of the Cross-Modal Research Laboratory at Oxford. And Charles is really the guru around cross-modal research. And I've had the privilege of getting to know Charles and working with him on quite a few projects. And where this work gets interesting is when we understand how senses work together, we can perform sensory hacks. And, you know, one example that I use very often is to, you know, for have the listeners imagine, if you will, in your head, two shapes. One shape has a lot of round edges. Another shape has a lot of sharp edges. And if I were to say to you, okay, one of these shapes we're going to name a kiki, and one of the shapes we're going to name a booba, which is the booba and which is the kiki. And most people would say, oh, well, the booba shape obviously is the one with the rounded edges, and the kiki shape has the sharp edges. And then when you start exploring, well, why? No one's ever really studied that in school. The reason we go there is because we're thinking about, you know, what we're seeing in our mind's eye, the shapes. We're thinking about the sounds, the way the sounds form in our mouth. We might even see the letters. And so we're drawing conclusions based on a combination of senses. And where the work it gets interesting for me is when we start playing with one sense using another. So, for instance, a lot of the work that I've worked with Charles has been on sound and taste. So we've looked at how we can change your perception of flavor, of sweetness, bitterness, spiciness, simply by changing what we're putting in your ears, not what we're putting in your mouth. And a practical application for this in advertising was, for instance, a piece of work that we did for Propel, where we created an experience where we looked at the flavor profile of Propel, which is made up of two contrasting flavors, if you will. One is fruit, which is part of the flavor infused in the Propel vitamin water. And the other is really electrolytes. And we kind of taste those electrolytes through the sodium or the salt that's there. And those electrolytes are designed to kind of put that sodium back in after a workout. So we created two soundscapes that we knew from our research enhanced either this flavor of sweetness or the flavor of the sodium. And we built an app that had a volume fader that could crossfade between these two soundscapes. And so at a Propel event, we had kiosks set up. Individuals could come up. They could take their Propel, drink their Propel, and move the fader from one side to the other. And, you know, this is where we saw the alchemy working, because you'd see people's eyes getting really big, and then they'd stop, and they'd take their headphones off and say, how are you doing this? You're changing how sweet this tastes. And I know I'm drinking out of the same bottle. I'm just changing this fader. And so this is the fun that, you know, brands can have when we start playing with some of these sensory elements. And there are certainly other practical aspects of this in healthcare. If you're a diabetic and you need to cut sweetness out of your diet, maybe we could put that back in with a sweet soundscape. Or for chemotherapy patients who maybe have their sense of taste or smell affected as a result of the treatment, and really kind of has an adverse effect on their eating experience, using some of these sonic sensory hacks, we've been able to see ways to really bring some of the flavor experience back for these patients in really powerful ways. So that's just, you know, one aspect of how we might use this idea of cross-modalism in our senses. And again, going back to our experiences of the world being sensory. And so just using science to help us play with those experiences that way.
That's brilliant. Hey, Steve, I want to wrap up this legend show like we do most shows. And we think that legendary people like you have legendary senses of humor. So here goes. What is the brand of your trademark hat? And if that brand had a sound, what is the sound to that hat?
Well, you know, I, as far as the literal brands of the hats, I go back and forth between two different brands. There's Gurin Brothers, which is actually a San Francisco based brand. And then there's, Bailey's, and those are the two hats that I draw from. I've had different styles, but, as of late for the last few years, I usually wear what's called a pork pie hat with a stingy brim. I've found that it has become a trademark that actually helps at conferences, because people may not always remember my name, but they'll remember the hat. And it's an easy way for them to pick me out of the crowd if I've if I've spoken or they want to chat with me. You know, as far as a sound, you know, it's really interesting. I've not thought about, you know, the sound that a hat would make. But I would say probably if you were to take my hat off and put your ear against it, what you would probably hear is just the sound of wheels turning, because that's always going on underneath that hat.
Wow, that figures. The sound of curiosity and creativity, of course. Okay, final question. Is there a singular song that represents you, Steve Keller?
Oh, wow. You know, that changes so often because it can depend on depend on context. But I would have to say one of the songs that I just regularly go back to is Frank Sinatra's "Fly Me to the Moon." Part of it is because it's a classic. He just has a way of phrasing things with his voice. My favorite interpretation of that is the one with the Count Basie Orchestra and Quincy Jones. If anyone knows Quincy, amazing producer, he did all those horn arrangements. And it just has this feel good moments where it's kind of soft and snapping fingers, and then the horns come in and there's a bit of the blast, and you know, you can't help but feel like it lifts your spirits. And the whole message of the song is you know, a relationship that just takes you out of this world, and it's an experience for me every time I listen to it.
Beautiful. Hey, Steve, thank you for being on our Legends show today. Where can our listeners contact you for more information?
Well, they can certainly look me up on LinkedIn. I'm easy enough to find there, and you can reach out to me there. And that's probably the best way to find me. I'm more than happy to answer any questions that folks want to send to me there.
Well, you are as advertised. What a pleasure to have you on. Please come back for another conversation on sound. Thank you again, Mr. Keller.
Thank you, Rick. Happy to chat anytime.
That was a legendary Steve Keller. We appreciate him being on our Legends show today. We hope that you enjoyed our program. And as we always say, may you live the best version of you. Have a great week.
Fly me to the moon. Let me play among the stars.
So thanks to our sponsor, Edward Jones. They are our trusted financial advisor. And Edward Jones has been instrumental in helping us pivot our lives built around health, happiness, travel, and adding value to other people's lives. You can contact our advisor, Serban Marasini, by emailing him at serban.marasine@edwardjones.com. And thanks again to their sponsorship of this program.
And thanks to our sponsor, Gracefully Yours Greeting Cards, and their hilarious Church Kitchen Lady cards. Church Kitchen Ladies are a bunch of maybe 20 million volunteers across the United States that work in 300,000 churches, and they say stuff like, mind your own biscuits and life will be gravy. They also say, crunch tacos, not abs. And psst, you're crazy is showing, you might want to tuck that back in. And one of our favorites is, life is short, lick the bowl. If you want to find out more about the wonderful Church Kitchen Ladies and join their roundtable, go to gracefully-yours.com today and find out about Church Kitchen Ladies and purchase all the rest of the fine Gracefully Yours greeting cards.